This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, found on the web at www.nysta.org. My name's Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of April 16th, 2012. Well, the profoundly dry conditions have actually led to an insignificant proportion of the I-95 corridor to be in a classified severe drought. This is concerning as it will likely lead to improper watering of landscapes. Therefore, the expected warm temperatures this week will make it worse if combined with an overwatered landscape. Most of our cool season grasses, not annual bluegrass, can be supplied with about 60% of evapotranspiration and perform well. The confounding factor is the soils are getting very dry and will have limited storage. Therefore, it's best to begin to irrigate soils slowly to allow them to wet and prevent runoff. Deep and infrequent would be ideal at this time, as there is excellent root growth in most of turf areas due to ideal growing conditions through the winter and now early spring. Even the shallow rooted annual bluegrass has roots below the 2 to 3 inch depth at this time. Just a reminder about the Cornell Turfgrass webinar series, Right to Your Computer. This is a brand new activity available through Cornell University. And it begins on May 16th with our first program featuring Marty Petrovic on New York State fertilizer law and fertilizer management. And you can register at our Cornell Turfgrass website. DEC, New York State DEC credits will be available. GCSAA certification credits will be available. And if you're planning ahead, our next session is also going to happen on May 23rd, a week after Marty, with our weed scientist Jenny Gao Niffen, and she'll be talking about weed control, and also DEC credits and GCSAA CEUs will be available. Now, back to the weather. A fifth consecutive above normal week, but as like last week, not surging as much at only 3 degrees above normal. The southern New England and Long Island is slightly more than 3 degrees above. We're still remaining 3+ weeks ahead of normal for growing degree days, but have not accumulated many in the last few weeks. Soils are still in the low 50s to the north and mid to high 50s to the south. It continues to be very dry with ET levels in the half to three quarters of an inch and less than a half an inch rainfall, another deficit week. Areas along the I-95 corridor from DC to Boston have entered severe drought conditions as categorized by the U.S. Drought Monitor Service. Many of the reservoirs are in good shape, mostly from last fall's historic rain. However, stream flow, especially in New England, is very low as it often relies on snowmelt at this time. Still very little change in recommendations this week for weed management. We're getting into the period where soils are ideal for summer patch and take all infections, so preventative sprays will be helpful. Also, many have made the first annual bluegrass weevil adult spray with forsythia at half green, half gold. And finally, the forecast. A gradual warming from the weekend will lead to very warm conditions early in the week and likely some severe heat stress. By midweek, a return to cooler, closer to normal temps. Expect temps early to be in the 80s to 90s and 50s to 60s for highs. The period will have scattered but not significant rainfall, so expect dry conditions to continue, and you can check out all the weather information at our forecast website. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins with Walt Nelson's Western New York report, indicating dandelions are in the 20 to 30% bloom and sports fields beginning to show the wear and tear, especially goal mounds. Some cold injury to young clover plants is not likely to lead to kill, and some purple-bladed perennial ryegrass on a very wet site, possibly related to the inability to absorb phosphorus from the soil, and maybe some cold injury as well. Remember, you cannot apply phosphorus to turfgrass areas in New York without a soil test that indicates you need phosphorus. And now to the Adirondack report from Emily Sellett. Soil temps remain in the mid to upper 30s. Fortunately, rain, snow, and hail has helped greatly. Soils seem moister now than in the past couple of weeks. Tip burn seems to be the only evident damage from the cold, dry, windy conditions we have experienced recently. A mow will improve their appearance. Many old grass strains, Seaside, and I believe Colonials, turn purple again like last fall. While this is often mistaken for phosphorus deficiency, it's likely related to a cold response that might involve phosphorus. However, it is unlikely a phosphorus application will make much difference. The Capital Report from Dave Chinnery. Interesting war of words going on between major seed companies regarding their coated seed products. There might be some confusion on the coating issue. If questioned, refer to last week's shortcut where the benefits and limitations of coated seeds are addressed. And finally, the Westchester Report from Rick Harper and Jared Giordano. This past week, we've gotten reports about the demand that irrigation systems being turned on due to the dry weather, and contractors are scrambling to keep up. Insect reports have continued with disease reports quiet and hesitation to implement practices like weed control fertilization due to lack of rainfall and the affiliated concern related to reduced efficacy. Concerns over weeds like hairy bittercress and dandelion continue. And now a regional update from our friend at the University of Massachusetts, Randy Prostak, about Japanese stiltgrass management. Japanese stiltgrass is the odd warm season grass, a C4 species, that is both tolerant of full sun and shaded conditions. In fact, it is a major invasive species in wooded areas, choking out the understory. Obviously, an important strategy at this time of year would have been to apply pre-emergence herbicides, and in fact, since it is usually about 2 to 4 weeks ahead of crabgrass, this might have been the season when a well-timed pre might have provided some control. Of course, post-emergent control with non-selective materials are available with Roundup will work now, but also a Claim Extra is now labeled for selective stiltgrass control, so be sure to check the label. A cranefly update from Dan Peck at Entomotech Fundamentals. Adults of the invasive cranefly Typhial oleracea are beginning to emerge in the warmer parts of the region. In the last week, Typhial oleracea adults have been reported from golf courses on Long Island, Westchester, and Cape Cod. We are working to fully confirm the identity of these insects, but all observations match the idea of them being Typhial oleracea rather than a non-damaging native cranefly species. This is earlier than I would have anticipated, but we do not have good understanding of timing in areas outside of western New York, and the situation may have been altered by the early spring warm-up. In western New York, spring emergence has historically been observed over the first 2 weeks of May. Therefore, now is the time to scout for the presence of Typhial oleracea and detect them for the first time if you've not yet encountered them, or to determine which areas of your turf are most infested. In Westchester County, for instance, oleracea has not been detected up till now. Early detection is vital for preventing outbreaks and minimizing impact. Scout for pupal cases on short mown turf, or look for low-flying gangly adults that look like giant mosquitoes. Then, follow through by collecting adults and getting them accurately identified. Catch a series of up to a dozen, kill by freezing, unthaw, fold the wings over the body, and put in an envelope addressed to me at Entomotech Fundamentals and 508 Cashong Road, Geneva, New York, 14456. This is as unfancy as it can get. Make it easy on yourself. I can identify them quick and easy and free as part of our efforts to track the movement of this invasive species across New York and beyond, and to help you make the correct diagnosis to guide your intervention decisions. My Gazing in the Grass update begins with a note about no-mow areas and ticks. As we've been discussing for some time now, the interest in growing in reduced mowing of turf areas, virtually creating more meadow-like landscapes. There are many strong reasons, from economic and environmental to conservation and reallocation of labor resources. A persistent question that continues to arise is the relationship between landscape management strategies such as reduced mowing and tick populations, especially those that might cause Lyme disease. An excellent publication is available from the University of Connecticut at www.ct.gov/CAES/site/default.asp. And look for the Tick Management Handbook link on the lower left to download the publication. The publication is slightly contradictory in that in one section it indicates mowing will reduce ticks, and then in another section suggests reducing mowing for a more ecological landscape and how mowing will not influence tick populations. Very little research exists on the influence of mowing frequency on tick population. However, it appears that wildlife populations such as deer and mice are the most significant factors that influence tick populations and independent of mowing programs. If you have a high population of these species, then no matter how you mow, you will likely have a high tick population. Therefore, if you're able to implement deer and mice reduction programs, this is likely to relieve any tick problems. More research is certainly needed in this area before a definitive recommendation can be made. A note about PGRs in warm weather. Unusually warm temperatures this week will allow for significant degree day accumulation, which will also lead to more rapid degradation of primo in the plant, as primo has no soil activity. The result of this could be decreased period of growth regulation and a more pronounced rebound effect that leads to a surge in growth. This can have two important implications for golf putting surfaces. First, there's evidence that during the rebound phase, plants are more susceptible to stress-related problems, notably basal rot anthracnose. Second, during the rebound phase, there is likely to be a noticeable drop in green speed due to the release of growth and increased resistance of the putting surface. The most effective means to deal with this is to maintain your normal effective application rate between an eighth and a quarter ounce per thousand, but shorten the spray interval. A note about cutworms. The mild winter experience through the Northeast has affected the arrival of our early season moths. Recent reports of black cutworm adults throughout the state signal an early arrival of the caterpillars. The first order of business for these moths is to mate and lay eggs. Golf course superintendents and athletic field managers are advised to pay close attention to moth activity, current temperatures, and future weather conditions as they begin to search for caterpillars and associated feeding damage. The decision to treat should be based on this scouting activity, caterpillar damage, and the potential threat of cutworms to sensitive turf grass areas. A note about dry conditions and pre-crab control. There's a wealth of evidence to indicate that pre-emergence herbicide needs to be activated or watered into the soil when applied to be active in the zone where crabgrass plants will be germinating. If you have made a pre-emergent herbicide application, either as spray or granular, it's important that the material is watered in at least to the thatch layer and even slightly further with about 0.15 to 0.25 inches of water. Be sure not to apply water at a greater rate than the soil can allow it to infiltrate, as this will lead to runoff of the product. And finally, a note about water-efficient landscapes. The drumbeat is underway with rainfall at a minimum regarding potential water restrictions. A paper was published recently by Utah State University's Professor Kelly Kopp attempting to classify landscape characteristics for water use. Under the well-watered conditions of this study, it was determined plant canopy cover rather than plant material water use characterization was the controlling factor in woody plant and perennial water use. This suggests that categorizing water use based on plant type, as suggested by the EPA WaterSense 2009 guidelines, appears to have no merit. Consequently, landscape managers may achieve meaningful water savings by simply adjusting landscape planting densities. And you can see this paper at the most recent publication of Hort Science, Volume 47, pages 254 to 263. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.